So hello and welcome to this episode of the Health Innovation Network podcast, live from Rewired in Birmingham. I'm Claire Portsmouth, Director of Communications and Engagement at the Health Innovation Network, and I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Chris Lang, CEO of UCL Partners, our Health Innovation Network for Northeast and North Central London, and Hugh Lloyd-Jukes, CEO of Health Navigator, an AI innovation that is reducing demand on urgent and emergency care through AI clinical coaching and currently supported by UCL Partners. Welcome both.
Delighted to be here.
Good afternoon, Claire.
So last year, the Health Innovation Network worked with Frontier Economics on the size of the Health Innovation Prize report, which set out just how significant the opportunity is for health innovation if we get it right. The report showed that scaling health innovation could unlock up to $246 billion in productivity gains for the UK economy, attracting billions in further investment and freeing up more than 230 million hours of NHS workforce time. Now, today, we'll be focusing on the opportunity that AI presents for improving NHS productivity. We're going to be hearing all about a recent project using AI to reduce demand in urgent and emergency care in Northeast London and exploring the ever-present implementation challenges that we as a network support health and care teams and innovators to navigate. So, to kick things off, Chris, at UCL Partners, you've been implementing AI for a number of years now. What is your view on the full potential of AI in healthcare, particularly in reference to delivering on the ambitions of the 10-year health plan, the life science sector plan, all the plans around and targets around productivity? And what do you think needs to be true for us to actually deliver on that potential?
Thank you, Claire. So yeah, I think a huge potential for AI, but AI that's done well, that's trained at the right sort of problems. Where does the potential sit? Predictive analytics that targets and segments out particularly at-risk or hard-to-reach communities, focusing our efforts on those most in need in a predictive and proactive ways, reducing inequalities and moving towards a more predictive and preventive model. That whole prediction AI, I think we then move into AI support for more accurate diagnosis. I think we then get into tools in AI that might make the life of patients more easy, may organise their care, that may streamline the processes and workforce of healthcare professionals, the ability to operate at larger scale with greater economy, with greater efficiency, and ultimately, as well as supporting clinicians, also providing superhuman performance in terms of prediction, organisation of care, diagnosis, and then we have automation of care where in closed loops where possible. So I think our job is to make that happen safely, responsibly, in a way that reduces inequalities and serves the needs of patients. And I think there's quite a lot of work to be done. But I think we have to embrace that positive disruption that's likely to come. And I think the other thing I would say is there's quite a lot of low-hanging fruit in AI that we just need to get done first. I'm not going to suggest Hugh's product is in any way lower high-hanging fruit. But this is not deep learning with data centers and huge energy consumption. There's a lot of data that we are just not using, and it's a disservice to patients that we're not acting more with more proactivity and precision.
Yeah, and it's a really great point. Obviously, we focus on the fact that AI can improve and increase productivity and help us with the sort of rising demand. But actually, there's also another angle in terms of supporting us with health inequity and supporting us improving patient experience and clinical experience of their work as well. Hopefully a lovely segue to you, Hugh, and your experience as CEO of health innovation company specialising in AI. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your company, what you do, and sort of your experience in trying to unlock some of the potential I spoke about earlier?
Absolutely. Thank you, Claire. And I think Chris is right. I think that AI represents a generational opportunity to rebuild healthcare around the patient. And the work at Health Navigator is perhaps a good example of how that can happen. You know, no one wants to be in hospital if they don't really need to be there. And so we use AI to identify those most at risk of becoming seriously ill for an extended admission and offer them the benefit of a clinical coach to help them stay healthy. And for me, that's quite a useful example of AI making a practical difference today in the ways, some of the ways Chris has described. So we're identifying rising risk, we're creating a teachable moment, and then we're enabling a deeply personalized whole person intervention with a skilled clinician, in this case by telephone. So you're seeing behavior change, you're seeing outcomes change, you're seeing patient experience improve. And so that's the package of using AI effectively as the afferent arm, and then an efferent arm that comes in behind to actually achieve a change that's measurable and beneficial at all.
And you guys have been working together on a specific project that's focused on emergency care transformation. Now, within that project, which I'd love to hear a bit more about, we often focus on the barriers or what's been hard about implementing. But actually, how have patients and clinicians reacted to this? Because from what you're saying there, it's very much geared up to improve their experience, not just focus on improving NHS productivity itself.
So I think the genesis of this for me was a good idea. So these guys were working for several years before we got involved. But I think I used to run an acute care pathway in UCLH. And what we noticed was the same patients were occupying huge amounts of our beds. But what I didn't realize, which these guys had, was that that cohort of patients turned over quite quickly and were actually predictable with AI tools. So basically, you have in the acute care pathway, you have a cohort of patients who move into high risk, high utilization, have a very bad experience, bad outcomes, and start to use hospitals a lot, and then move out of that pocket because their needs are met, or they go into care, or some of them sadly succumb. And I think what's been central to clinical and patient engagement is the common sense of that idea that this is not a futile situation. We can actually predict and intervene. There's a small number of patients who will be using hospital 6 months' time, and we can actually do something about it. And indeed, the only way, because they turn over, to make any sensible impact is to do it proactively in advance. So I would fundamentally say the reason patients and commissioners and clinical teams have engaged around this has been due to that. And I think it's the quality and the rigor of the intervention and the ability or the willingness of the company in this instance to subject themselves to rigorous evaluation, both in terms of our clinical outcomes, but also patient experience. So people engage around a good idea where the solution is executed well.
Amazing. And so tell us a bit about exactly how you've worked together and the impact that's been achieved for this specific project.
You should talk.
I think Chris touched on something that's really close to our hearts here, which is, as you say, the heart of this project is some really vigorous evaluation. And so this program of work is a partnership convened by UCL partners between Northeast London, where we are supporting, we're running the model over the anonymized records of the whole population. Actually, there's an observation stations for North Central London. They've been MPTing as well. And then there's evaluation by the This Institute for Cambridge University and LCP. So this is about a partnership to try and really understand this intervention and see what the lessons are for the community. In terms of the intervention itself, at the heart of this is helping people take control of their health and stay out of hospital. And we're coming from 10 years of this. We've been at this 10 years across actually 10 million patient records, 100 neighborhoods, 30 hospitals. So an awful lot has gone into getting us to this point of this scaled national demonstrator. And it's around seeking to increase quality of life and reduce attendance and admission and lengthy stay. Now, we're eagerly awaiting the interim findings from the evaluation. But I suppose there were two goals really, weren't there, Chris? One was to see, can you stand up this kind of intervention rapidly and at scale and replicably? And then can you reproduce the kind of outcomes we were seeing in previous studies? So for example, analysis within the last randomized controlled trial. And there we were seeing bed days and admissions down by more than 20% in the intervention cohort, any attendance down by more than 30%, and actually an increase in survival, about 18 qualities per 1,000 patients coached over 75, with no net increase of the GP workload. So those are the kind of outcomes that we're seeing if we can reproduce. In terms of can you stand it up rapidly, well, we went from zero patients in the pathway to 3,500 in last year in the calendar 2025, and we're on track for around 10,000 patients over the 2-year term.
the, and I think it's worth saying, although that's the activated cohort, the patients benefiting from the risk prediction tool, it, you know, it's somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million in East London that we're running the predictive vehicle on. So I think one of the things we've worked hard on this project is in these partnerships, having complementary roles and responsibilities that help deliver a goal. So Health Navigator have had the implementation, project, technology, data science chops, and they obviously build the clinical team, which is NHS white labeled free at the point of use. We've provided PPIE, we've engaged the evaluation and our partners in this institute and LCP. We've provided implementation science support, we've supported clinical and public engagement, we've managed stakeholders, policymakers, we helped form the business case, we've supported comms, and then Paul Galuli and his team in North East London have been instrumental in primary care engagement, opening up data, and then moving us into a position where, should the evaluation outcomes be positive, they're you know, ongoing commissioning, perhaps on a value-based contract. So I think putting together, you know, a strategic innovation project that may benefit many thousands of patients directly, but is benefiting a large part of the country, requires strategic partnership of the healthcare system, hopefully an organization like us as a HIN and a company. And we absolutely work together, and we have our ups and downs, but we're all working towards to the same goal.
How easy is it to stand up something like that in the current climate? So you've got a lot of pressures, a lot of carts, a lot of sort of workloads to contend with. How's it felt on the ground?
So I think full credit to Paul and the NEL team. I think it being a good, people are thinking this is a sensible thing. I think we had pump priming from National, and as a national demonstrator with a view that this would scale up nationally if it works. I think that was very instrumental in unlocking this, and it's not a huge amount of money to get some of it this off the ground. I think the advantage it's had in the current environment is it's relatively low disruption for existing clinical teams, but removes work from them. So it reduces stress in the urgent care pathway without displacing work into primary care, and providing that safe and effective, and it's benefiting patients, and patients are happy, people willing for that type of disruption to happen. So I think having these population level tools with a virtual intervention that floats alongside the NHS, hopefully improving outcomes and reducing demand without massively disrupting the lives of the busy clinicians that are already out there working, has been helpful here, Dunfee Drew.
No, I think that's a great summary. I obviously very sensitive to the change that all our ICB colleagues are going through at this point in time. I have to honour the way that which they've continued to work with us through that period of disruption of their environment. I think there is an energy that comes from the patient feedback. I was speaking yesterday at this event at Blue Wired and sharing Glenroy Hazard's story through video and a discussion. And when you see people like Glenroy say things like, thank you for waking me up, that you came and found me at a moment where maybe I knew I needed help or I didn't know I needed help, and you've restored my connectivity and trust in the system. You've helped me find my way so I didn't end up going down a troubled path, has been very energizing for us in the partnership, but also for those clinicians that are and colleagues that are going through other change processes. So I think that's also been a helpful source of energy and future focus for people at this time.
And I think that it's relatively accessible data, patient activation, but it's holistic and it's personalized. And I think, you know, there's just bits of demand all over the NHS that can help with. And I think that we talk about the 4 P's approach, being predictive, proactive, personalized, and participatory, you know, patients having a lot of agency in what happens to them. You know, it's really a generalizable model. for the NHS, in which AI is going to be an absolutely central part. And you can target inequalities because you're being proactive about patients with the worst predicted outcomes. And when you personalize care at that level, you have a solution that transcends geographies, socioeconomic groups, and so on and so forth. And one of the interesting things with this project is, you know, it's been live in one of the most diverse populations in Europe. I think 4 to 5 languages. Not only is the algorithm been able to be customized for those populations, but the coaching intervention, the language skills of the coaches, has been able to be optimized for each, almost, you know, I think at borough level. So it's a really nice way to do modern healthcare.
Absolutely. And I think that sometimes we are on the cautious side with what digital and AI can do in terms of worsening health equity. So it's really lovely to hear an experience where it's sort of flipping the script on that. So really, hopefully, great story, great results hopefully coming in the evaluation. It's very clearly aligned with the direction of policy at the minute. Another element of the life science sector plan is obviously about how we scale innovation. How do we get from what you guys have experienced and all the work you've done to either a scale or diffusion model where more people can experience what you guys have done in this project, but without having to start again from scratch?
Well, I think my main reflection is that the currency here is trust, isn't it? When we sometimes in our system feel the need to do another pilot, I think interrogating why that might have been, what was it around the information governance or the outcomes or the patient groups that said that actually we felt that in our system we're in a unique position that is not transferable. I think that's also when we talk about machine learning or artificial intelligence, then actually also thinking about how we design these programs. So one of the big contributions UCLP have made has been, and I've hugely valued it coming into this organization in this program, is the scale and quality of the PPIE work done. And one of the transferable learnings, I think, for us is, I mean, it's been co-development for a decade now, but co-development of every phase of this project. But one thing I really keep reflecting on is you can always make the materials clearer in the description of the intervention, in the transparency with which people are able to input into the intervention, with the flexibility of how you communicate and meet where people where they're at. So I think considering the trust currency with colleagues who might want to commission and roll out, but also with our citizens, is probably, for me, at the heart of this transformational opportunity we have now.
And I would say, I would add to that. So I think we view scaling as a march across, you know, the NHS, ICB by ICB. I think we need to start thinking about local, regional, national as a 3-step scale up. And with this particular solution, it's not just that it can scale up, it is that it is scalable. And by that, I mean, if it works, you can have a national data pipe that, a bit like NHS Online, activates a national UAC coaching team who could be anywhere in the country. In fact, it will probably be dispersed. They need to then interface with the local healthcare economy for the effector. But this doesn't actually need to be implemented ICB by ICB. It can technically, it is scalable and could be implemented nationally as a virtual service. I think we need to be thinking about scaling in that way, as well as marching through geographies over many years.
Yeah, absolutely. So final question. You've spoken about how this has sort of been a 10 years into an overnight success, I think the framework is sometimes said. Looking 10 years in the future, what are you most excited about for the potential of AI and innovation? Where would you want to see us in 10 years' time?
Yes, as I said at the beginning, I do think this generational opportunity should be thought of that, you know, the opportunity to rebuild around the patient. And for me, the big untapped resource that focusing resources like our tool does and in other AI is that patient time and the ability to change behavior. That's the resource that we need to tap into. That's where real change and lastingly preventative and proactive care comes from. And so over the long term, I think the compounding effects of using AI to create teachable moments, to case find, if you like, or to seek to find the people who would benefit from a nudge or a redirection in some sense to improve those individuals' quality of life and their outcomes, and thereby the sustainability of our NHS. I mean, I think that's the really exciting thing right now.
Amazing. Chris?
Yeah, I would agree. I think we are going to pivot towards an AI-powered health service wrapping around an individual patient with the patient in the middle of their health service. So I would say you need digital access. Patients have their own data. They'll be running individualized prediction scores and prompts. Patients can interact with an AI coach throughout their lives. And then when that transcends into interacting with a more formal health service, that's very efficiently operationally managed through AI support. But also those clinical encounters and procedures or other interventions are AI supported. And that will have, you know, we have a healthcare deficit. We have a workforce deficit. I don't see any major, I mean, I think medical workforce roles, healthcare workforce roles will change and adapt. But we have to maximize that opportunity for access, personalized care, and effectiveness of the healthcare system, and center that AI health service around an individual patient.
Brilliant. Thank you both for the lovely cautious optimism to end on. Definitely an exciting thought. Sadly, that's all we've got time for. Huge thank you to our guests for today, Chris and Hugh, and thank you to Rewired for hosting us. And thanks to you guys for listening. If you'd like to hear more from us, please do explore other episodes of the Health Innovation Podcast, which you can find on our website and on all the main podcast platforms. Sign up to the Health Innovation Network newsletter or follow us on LinkedIn and join in the conversation by tagging us at the Health Innovation Network.